It's terrible, crazy. Everybody. Cancel your tickets and don't go.
Cancel
your
tickets
and don't go. That's the only thing Matt messaged us with. I was like, is he serious? I'm like, oh, he can't be serious. I'm like, I'm not here. I don't want to hear anything more.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. And I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And we are here for episode number 254. And we're just going to talk about the Assassin's Creed movie, right?
Right. That doesn't come out for another 2 days, my friend.
It's rating real high on the Rotten Tomatoes right now.
I haven't looked at it.
That doesn't really play into my decision to see it or not.
Well, it's hovering at a solid 17% with 30 different movie outlets coming in.
17, really?
Yeah.
But that should not surprise you.
Oh, I think Joe Dirt 2 is higher than that.
It does not surprise me, but I also think this is going to be a turd bucket.
I mean, we're never gonna have a good video game movie. I think we should all just resign to that fact, because we'll never allow ourselves to have a good video game movie.
Ooh, what does that mean?
It just means that we want to hate them, before they, they're so bad historically, by that anytime one gets announced, it's like, oh, well, this is just going to be bad. That's the norm. That's what we want. And that's what we get. We expect it to be bad. And so it is bad, right? That's kind of how it works. I don't
know. Sometimes they're actually bad, though. I don't know. I enjoyed Doom with The Rock. I thought that was great. And Carl Urban.
Sure. That's a kitschy fun, right?
Yeah,
that's
just,
not
you know,
a terrible movie. It's just kind of it is what it is. It's all right.
Yeah.
But sometimes they're legitimately bad movies. I think that's the problem. The
Doom,
problem isn't
Doom
that,
has a 19% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What about Super Mario Brothers with
oh,
Bob
God.
Hoskins?
Yeah. Let's see.
That's a classic.
I'm just saying that I think we're not predetermining their badness by thinking that video game movies are bad.
15%.
Somebody can come along and make a good one. That's not we aren't preventing that from happening.
I feel like there's probably some deep ingrained reason as to why they're bad. And it might have something to do with I don't know, taking an interactive medium and making it not interactive at all, to the extent that you have to sit and watch it.
Right. Most of the time the games are better than the films, and games in general are a lot better than films most of the time. So it's a hard thing to kind of translate,
It's almost
Do you think it's that? Go for it.
I was going to say it's like the conversation where it's like, oh, I really liked Assassin's Creed. It's like, well, the game was better. I played that, It's like, I read the book instead of seeing the movie,
But that's a good question, though. Then why do they translate well into books?
That's a great question. I don't know. I think the problem with games translating to films is you try and cram a lot of lore and game exposition into a 90-minute film, and it just doesn't work because games typically are 10 times that length, if not more. So
absolutely. And
how do you cram it all in there?
I kind of think
it just becomes a muddled mess.
I agree. And I kind of think that people don't know what they want from a video game movie, so it just never materializes. I don't think you could ask somebody in order for you to give such and such video game adaptation movie, an 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, what does it need to do for you? I don't think anybody really knows what they want, and they're always disappointed. And I think that's what you end up with, And so there's no bar to set, because I don't think we know where the bar is for what it's supposed to be. That's just my guess.
Yeah. I mean, the ultimate comparison, though, right, is that comic book movies were always kitschy and ridiculous for a long time. Mm-hmm. I would even include the much loved Tim Burton Batman movies. They're still kind of kitschy and in their own Tim Burton way.
Oh, absolutely.
And then comes along Christopher Nolan, right? I'm just saying that I think it can happen. I think the root is what Ash, I think that's the biggest problem with most of them. I actually thought, because what's his name did the World of Warcraft movie? Was it Duncan?
Oh, I forget.
What's his name? He did Moon, right? Same guy that did those two movies? Am I incorrect? Anyways, I'll look it up later and correct myself. Never. but it was a better director. But that movie suffered from, like, A, just, like, batshit crazy lore. Like, I think that's the bigger, one of the big issues is that a lot of video games have just ridiculous lore. Like, if they get into, the weird god stuff with Assassin's Creed, and then they, like, it's just going to go to a point where you're like, how does this make, it didn't make sense during the game. It's not going to make sense all of a sudden in the movie. Right.
Then
you're trying to cram all of that batshit crazy lore into an hour and a half or 2 hours of movie time, and then it gets even more ridiculous.
Yeah, you know? I guess maybe the interesting choice that you have as a filmmaker is to make a film that is oddly specific to the point where, like, only people who are familiar with the series can enjoy the film, or you make it, you know, generalized, and you water down, you know, 10 plus games of information into a 90-minute film and just hope that, like, you know, the people that enjoy Transformers, The Last Knight, will enjoy this film as well, you know, because that's kind of that's where you're aiming at, I suppose, with a video game film.
Yeah. I also think that Hollywood thinks video games are for kids still, and they tend to make movies. If it's not PG, then we're not going to make, you know, or PG-13 or whatever, then we won't make, you know, $150 million on it. So there's no point. And I also think they make most of their back end globally on these things and don't really give a shit about American audiences.
Yeah, again, that's Transformers, right? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, it's like they know they're going to make $300 million in China. So why give a shit about what they make here or what the ratings are, at least?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
That's true.
For sure.
Let's do the rundown.
Anyways.
Yeah, anyways. So the film that I think we're actually going to talk about is Rogue One, right?
Yeah.
Some of us are hungover from the film still, which is really exciting. But there are some other things to talk about. Super Mario Run came out last week, and I don't think we got together last week, so we'll talk about that a little bit. I finished the Telltale Batman series, so we'll just give some final thoughts on that and some news and what we've been up to, and we'll just kind of hang out, eggnog and chill.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
Sounds like a plan.
Right on.
This episode is brought to you by Loot Crate. Forget the holidays. December's theme is revolution. Are you ready to help overthrow an unrelenting evil regime? Now's the time to help hack the planet with December's Revolution Crate. This month's crate will feature an original t-shirt, an exclusive Funko Pop figure, as well as an awesome F Society exclusive from Mr. Robot. So head on over to lootcrate.com/ratedNA. Use the code ratedNA. Get 10% off your subscription and buy Ash a burrito. So please do that. We like it. Loot Crate's great. And you'll get Mr. Robot stuff.
Excellent.
Mr. Robot's fun. Scott, what have you been up to?
Well, Ash and I saw Rogue One today, which was really awesome. It was fun.
Did you guys buy each other snacks?
No, I bought his kid a shirt.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no, it's all good.
He doesn't have any, so that was...
Oh boy!
Just dress him in a trash bag.
Open any one of those boxes stacked at your house right now.
It's now chin high, by the way, the boxes.
Yeah, we enjoyed some post movie taco chat as well. So we
We did.
Yeah, but so I did that, and I've been playing Super Mario Run on the iPhone. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. Finished Telltale's Batman Season 1. I completed Watch Dogs. Holy crap!
Completed it.
Yeah, wow. talk about a grind and a half, man. Like,
yeah, there you go.
That game probably has the most diverse amount of annoying achievements that I've ever seen.
Oh wait, did you 100% it?
Yes, I did.
Oh, Jesus.
God, yeah. God. There are, like, that game has achievements that require you to do things online, things that require things to be done to you online. Like, you have no control over whether or not that happens, and then your standard Ubisoft fare of, you know, collection and numerous side missions and all kinds of crazy stuff like that. But it's
done.
That's
why you played so much Super Mario Run, because you open worlded yourself out of it.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm like, I kind of ebb and flow between gigantic, like, open world AAA style games, and then you know, right now, you know, going to the next thing is I started playing Song of the Deep, which is the Insomniac like indie. It was like kind of like published as a GameStop, we're not publishing games, but we're publishing this one kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's okay. I mean, I don't feel like I'm going to review this game someday, because I already have a impression of it, which is, I feel like no matter which direction you're going in with a Metroidvania style game, there are currently games that are, like, slightly better in this area that are available on Xbox One right now. So, like, if you wanted a game that was more of a romp, you should play Headlander. And if you wanted a game that was, more of a tactical, like, platformer where you have to execute a bunch of different moves and stuff, that game is Ori and the Blind Forest. So I feel like Song of the Deep finds itself positioned in a really weird space in this, sort of crowded place of Metroidvania style games that are, it was like there's Shadow Complex was remastered, and I think there was like a Shinobi re-release.
Mark of the Ninja or something.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, Shinobi.
Yeah, they did a Shinobi release that was like that too. So this, there's a lot of games in this genre, surprisingly. And I mean, unless the ocean is really what the draw is, the game is visually beautiful, but I currently find it hard to recommend. But that's always the challenge with these Metroidvania games, that you always start out so weak. And the game just kind of plods along, and it's not until you get, a majority of your abilities where you actually feel like you can have fun with the game. So I'm kind of in that weird space. I don't know if my opinion will change, but that's what I'm playing right now and in Super Mario Run, but we'll get to that later. So Matt, why don't you go next?
Sure. So I too saw Rogue One. I saw it yesterday, and I got a commemorative cup to go with my...
Did you get the Stormtrooper, the Jyn Erso, or the droid?
The K2SO?
No, I got the glass, like, Mondo cup.
You got good one.
Yeah, I went to Alamo, so they had, like, Mondo cups that they made.
That's excellent.
So I bought one of those. And then, did that. Had yet another terrible Alamo experience, but the movie was really good.
Okay.
This time...
So we sat down, we got to there at 10 a.m. and we did the morning one, which I'm really enjoying. But I have yet to get coffee at one. Well, no, we got it once. They like keep running out of coffee somehow, which seems like a thing that's impossible to run out of. And then the lady, so they come, they're really awesome because there's the no talking rule,
Yes.
They came by and they said, hey, this is our all ages showing of Rogue One. So there's kids here. We allow some noise, like people can't just talk in the movie theater, but like, if kids are allowed to cry or make noise and no one's able to kick them out for being children, and I was like, we were like, yeah, it's fine. They're like, you can exchange your tickets if you want. We're like, no, well, it's fine. This is basically, it'll be a regular movie experience. They still don't allow cell phones. Like, they still have rules. It's just like, there's kids.
So it's hard to keep a kid quiet for 2.5 hours. Yeah.
So I'm there, and I purposely took the seat next to the family because on the other side was just a couple. And I was like, and I know Melissa gets distracted really easy by noise. So I sit down, and the kids that were there were like perfect angels. They were like they were just enthralled by this movie and just watching intently and like weren't talking. They were just, eating their snacks and watching the movie and really loving it. The mom, on the other hand, is open mouth chewing gum and blowing bubbles directly next to me. And I just kept looking at her, and she caught my eyes once, and I kind of gave her a look like, really? Like, do you not know what you're doing? And then she just kind of like shrugged at me and then kept doing it. And I was like, why have to say something to an adult about this? This is ridiculous. And then she eventually stopped, but whatever. So it was just, it's a weird theater. I haven't gotten the grasp of how it works yet. But anyways, we saw Rogue One, played a bunch more Forza Horizon 3.
Nice.
Which I am weirdly addicted to.
Can we talk about that for a second? What are you doing in the game? I want to know.
I've opened up the third thing or the second or the third.
Oh, so you like opened a new festival spot in the game?
Yeah. I think I either have two or three of those now.
Cool.
I don't remember. And then I'm doing a bunch of street races. I'm really terrible at the street races. I just bought my first car with credits. I haven't done that yet. So I bought a Jaguar.
Nice.
So I've been doing like a bunch of street races with that. I think the key is like picking a car and really like pinning down how it handles, because they all handle very differently. Because the top speeds, once you upgrade and stuff, the top speeds kind of all even out. So if you're doing like a specific task, then it might be worth switching cars. But if it's just a race, it's really about how well you handle the specific car you're in more than anything else.
Yeah, I find that it really boils down to finding a car that you are comfortable driving, like almost a car that suits your gameplay style,
Yeah, exactly.
And then,
so like,
oh, go ahead.
Well, yeah. So like, I was just gonna say that's kind of like once you figure that out, and I think you really have to spend. Which is kind of what the fun part is. You kind of really have to spend time driving those cars around. So I have like four cars right now. I bought like an old souped up Ford Fairlane that I like souped up a bunch. I've got the Jaguar, like a BMW SUV, I think, mm-hmm. and then a Mustang. And I was like, okay, I need to like get in each. I need to go back to the Mustang because it was my first car, and I think if I soup it up a little, I'll like it more. But yeah.
Yeah, I would normally not recommend this, but if I may make a recommendation, in the interest of my limited time, I actually went ahead and bought the, I guess there's I don't know, I guess you'd call it a time saver pack that basically
like an upgrade pack.
That yeah. It basically doubles your credits and gives you more chances at the spins. So like every time you level up, you get a free spin on the wheel, you know? Mm-hmm. So
I already get that.
Oh, you do?
Do you not get that? Yeah, oh, no. Yeah, I get spin every time I level.
Oh, but this thing will give you, it'll double whatever you get on the wheel.
Oh.
So okay. Like, while, I mean, like you said, credits come very easily in the game, but,
yeah.
Doing that for me kind of gave me, more credits basically to acquire more cars basically. So, just being able to do that was helpful because it got me through more cars faster so I could find one that worked. And then, I think, you know, by chance, I was lucky enough to very early on in the game, like land a spot on the wheel that got me a car that had a XP boost built into it, like for doing tricks and stuff. So, and that turned out to be the car that I like to drive the most because it seems to be versatile enough for doing. I like to do a lot of the drift.
Is that your BMW?
Yeah, it's the BMW with the stickers on the side.
You're in it a lot in my races.
Oh, that makes sense. I drive it a lot. And it's really good for, I like to do the drift zones and some of the stunts and everything. So that's a good,
I haven't gotten the drifting down yet. Like I can do it, but I didn't fully understand what I was supposed to do for like the mission. Like I was trying to get it done. And then I realized I don't think I had to stay in that little parking lot that I was in. It was very confusing, but, there's a couple like challenges that I don't fully understand.
Oh.
But to be honest, like I kind of just drive around.
Well, yeah, that's the point. You just do whatever you want. my advice, if you feel like this is something you want to do, is I would try to learn how to drive manual if you can.
I thought about it. Yeah. I almost turned it on last night. Cause I was like, oh, I forgot I could do manual. Cause do you use the bumpers to,
no, I think I use the buttons, but what driving manual will do for you is that if you end up doing things like the drift zones or you, start doing some of the off-road races, once you kind of get a feel for driving manual, it actually helps you to drive more efficiently because sometimes you can't rely on the shifting of the car, and then
it even makes
doing like hairpin turns easier because if you know for a lot of people it's hard
to downshift.
Can downshift instead of braking, and it kind of makes the whole thing like more manageable. Yeah. In my opinion,
is like all about drift at that point. Like you're gonna slide when you brake. I used to drive when I would play Gran Turismo all the time. I would always drive manual because I could downshift while I was turning and stuff. And I saw it the other night and I was like, oh, I should turn that on. And I haven't turned it on.
Yeah, yet. It's really fun.
Weirdly, I think you would actually really enjoy this game.
That's what I was trying to tell you guys. Like, it's anyone can play it. Like, that's the weird thing about that game.
I don't hate driving games. I like them on occasion. I just, I figured like by the time I actually got this, you guys would be way done with it. So I was just like,
oh no way.
Like, I could see myself picking this game up for a very long time. Like it's really just honestly enjoyable. And then the challenges and stuff are really fun. And the map is huge. Like I don't even have the Snow Mountain version thing yet.
Oh yeah. There's a new DLC. Map.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically it's like, it's first and foremost a racing game, but you are by no means required to race. You know, like if you just want to grab like the Halo Warthog and do donuts like in the on the airstrip, you can do that. Like it just doesn't matter.
If you want to go find every jump and every sign that you can knock down like and get points for it, like they're totally cool with it. They're like, yeah, just drive around the map and go do that. That's fine.
Yeah, I have it installed on my computer.
Nothing but good things about it. So.
Yeah, it's just oddly therapeutic. Yeah. Anyways, cool. Sorry about that diversion.
Oh, that's fine.
It's a really good game.
A bunch of Hearthstone on my Fizzone. Nice. Ash, can we play each other when I see you on? I do not know how
we
this
can.
Works.
You can. You just request a match, and that's that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because last time I went to click it was just like, start a chat. And I was like, I don't want to chat with him. I just want to see.
Yeah, there's a daily challenge you'll get every once in a while, too, that gives you like 80 gold for playing against a friend. So one of these days, we'll have to do that.
I did all the gadget stand challenges and then got those packs. And I have cool. I currently have like a weirdly very good priest deck.
Oh, cool.
I have a priests good hunter fun. Deck. Yeah, I have a good hunter deck and a good paladin deck and a good priest deck. And the priest one, the only weakness I've found so far is another priest. And even then, like, it's like 50-50 when I go up against another priest. Like, I'll be, if they, because it's like at a certain point when two priests are playing each other, the game just goes forever. Like, it just doesn't end.
Yeah, people run out of cards and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it's been fun. I'm enjoying it again. It's such a weirdly addicting fun game. So,
oh, it's great. It's absolutely great. It just reminds me of, like, you know, playing, because they basically ripped off Magic. It just reminds me of, like, back in my youth playing Magic with my friends, except for I'm playing against total randos, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I finally fired up my PC, played some Overwatch, told you guys that my new configuration had me on, like, full everything on Overwatch.
That's great.
So
yeah.
That's good.
It looks pretty on Ultra, huh?
Yeah, everything looks great. Like, I was like, oh, because I went, I was like, I wonder if I have to turn stuff up. And I went to Overwatch and it was just like everything was at full. And I was like, oh, okay. Neat. I've never lived in this world before.
Like, yeah. So that's, I played the crazy Overwatch thing. Like, that card is affordable now, too. I mean, it's not like dirt cheap, but it's still like it's reasonable, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I got it on a really good sale for like $160, but it was like, yeah, that card is killer. Like, I was like, I thought it was going to be like, oh, it's okay. But no, it's legitimately very good. I did learn when I upgraded, though, that I don't have another, is it a PCI Express is what that's running on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only have one, so I can't do the double card like later on down the road if I wanted to, but
yeah, okay.
I would just have to get an upgraded card. So I got to play a little bit of Overwatch with the new PC. Everything ran very well, which was fun. And then I also played, which I thought Scott would like this, I downloaded the, because I'm in, are you guys in the Good Old Games Galaxy beta?
No, I'm not.
I have the,
oh, really?
I have the desktop software, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I bought Vampire the Masquerade through them forever ago.
Yes.
And because, who was, was it Michael?
I think it was Harper, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Harper was talking to us on Twitter about it. And I was like, oh yeah, I don't think I ever actually beat that game officially. So I downloaded it. Fired that up, and good to know. I also got to play that at full resolution as well.
Yeah, oh, did you?
Yeah.
How old is that game? Like 7 or 8 years old?
Oh, older than that, I think.
Oh, it's so good, man! It's like I can't believe how they kind of hit the nail on the head as far as the what I expected.
Especially
that to be
that terrible TV show. Like, it's amazing that they got one piece of like external content.
There was also a terrible game that preceded it too, and then
somehow they were.
A second game was made. Like, you would think that one game would have sunk it, but
I wonder what studio that is. I'd have to go look. I wonder if they're still around.
That's a good question, but that game is really good.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Could feasibly play it at least two different times, once as Malkavian and once as anything else, you know, to be honest.
Yeah,
with
I fired up a Malkavian run because I remembered I did like Toreador or something before, and I was like, oh, I'll try Malkavian this time.
Yeah, for people that don't know what we're talking about, the Vampire the Masquerade is based off of the Vampire World of Darkness series. And the Malkavian are a race of vampires who are basically insane. Yep. And the thing that's really cool about this particular game, Bloodlines, it's Bloodlines, right?
Yes.
The thing that's really cool about Bloodlines is that they actually put in an entirely different set of dialogue choices for when you play as Malkavian. So, like, you,
and some of them are like completely unrelated to what's said to you.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You just have a response. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Because you're insane. So you just say like, you're like, oh, bananas and tacos. And they're like, what? Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are
and
those.
They just roll with it.
Yeah. And they become dialogue choices.
It's not quite like, you know, Mass Effect level where they're like, oh, and then they react to your bananas and tacos, but it you know, it's still, it's fun.
Yeah.
That's play sort of blind.
Yeah, it's quality.
And then last thing is we fired up Clone Wars, and we watched a bunch of Clone Wars before Rogue One, and because I've never finished it, and it's really great. I love that show.
Cool.
You watched it's pretty fantastic, on Netflix? Especially the later seasons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very good. So, Ash, you're the only one left.
The only one left. I didn't do anything all too exciting since the last time we chatted, but I did do some catch-up in preparation for Rogue One. So I actually caught up on Rebels. So they're on season 3 now, and I watched the first half of season 3, which I think is like, I think I watched like 9 episodes in like 2 or 3 days. And it's still, it's good. It's like, it, to me, it still isn't like Clone Wars got great, especially near the end. Like, it was just fantastic. And you had some of the best battles and just just insanity in the later seasons of Clone Wars. And I don't think Rebels is quite there yet, but it does do, you know, it's more of a family story. It's more of like an intimate, small tale of like this single crew. And there is some great stuff that I think ties in directly with Rogue One, which we'll talk about in our spoiler full review. And what else? I saw Rogue One today with Scott, which Scott mentioned, and can't wait to talk about it. And games I've been playing, also playing Hearthstone, playing some of those new Gedjazan cards are fun, yeah. And getting my butt kicked, trying to do some ranked stuff, not doing so well.
It's really tough to get past into the teens. It's like, it's hard at a certain point.
I think I'm 17 now, and I can't, because it's they reward you for win streaks.
Yeah.
So I'll do like 3 great games, and then I'll just lose like 6 and be I'm 18 again, and then have to do it. Yeah. So it's frustrating. I think I'm like
20 or 19 right now, but I don't always play ranked. So.
Well, I usually don't, just because it's too debilitating and makes you feel bad about yourself. So I tend to stay away from it, but. But I think, you know, once you get into those higher ranks in Hearthstone, people just have all the cards.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, they have all the cards and they have like the meta memorized where they just know all the combos and I don't know that shit. It's exciting, but I don't know if I'll ever memorize all that stuff. So
there's a lot of times you play and you lose to a guy and you're just like, you feel defeated and it kind of feels shitty. But there was one time recently I played a Paladin deck against a Paladin deck. And he did this crazy thing where he had all these cards that were like, you'd play 1/1s and they would boost them essentially. So like he had all these abilities to like get more of his like 1/1 soldiers of light or whatever they're called out.
Yeah.
And then or he'd like fill his board with them. Then he'd have like these 3 other combos that would like bump them all up to 5/5s all of a sudden or whatever it would be. It was crazy, but it was the most impressive loss. I like wished there was an emote for like, holy shit, that is an amazing deck. Like whatever you just
did. Yeah. No, there needs to be something like that. Yeah. I lost to a rogue the other night that kept pulling this minion in and out off the table. Just like kept bringing it back to its hand. Oh, and did it like 3 times in a single turn and then brought him out. And he was like a 27-14 or something. And I was like, what? I was like, what is happening? And he just killed me instantly. I was like, I don't even know what you did. Like, I'm totally clueless, but great strategy game. Love it. And still playing Overwatch. You know, try and hop on a little bit here and there in the evenings. It's still super fun. Not playing ranked in that for the same reason. I'm not really playing ranked in Hearthstone. So I'm just doing the fun arcade mode and casual running around shooting stuff. But it's great practicing all the characters. And what do you say we get on to some news?
News.
Hey, guys. Are you excited for the new DuckTales?
Woo.
Hey, nicely done.
Thanks.
I wasn't originally, but then I looked at the cast and I looked at the stills of the animation, and now I'm a little more excited.
It's going to be fantastic, man. It's got Danny Pudi in it. It's got Bobby Moynihan, who was one of the writers of my favorite SNL skit of the year.
Which one is that?
Which is, can you guess what it is?
Can I?
I'm David S. Pumpkins, man. Yes. Any questions? It
makes no sense. So ridiculous.
It's the best skit ever.
I know.
I watch it like 2 times a day.
Oh,
anyway.
My God. Boy.
Ben Schwartz is in it as well. Beck Bennett, also from SNL. David Tennant from Doctor Who. I'm just, you know, it's one of those things where I'm way too old to give a shit about this, but I do. And I love DuckTales.
That's probably why they made it. I mean, they didn't.
Well, yeah.
I think everybody, right. Everybody that's in this new cast probably loved it growing up. Right.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it's going to be a love letter to DuckTales. And I'd love to see revivals of all this old, you know, Disney stuff. I think it,
yeah,
it
but
would
there's,
be great.
So, okay.
You're supposed to do Muppet Babies.
This was where my hesitance lies, is that there are revivals of a lot of old Disney stuff, and they're terrible.
are they?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Have you watched, or not even Disney stuff, have you watched Alvin and the Chipmunks? I think we've talked about it possibly on this podcast.
No, I have not.
It's terrifying. They, humanize them. They're, they're part human-looking now.
Oh,
all I know
creepy.
Is this. I spent a weekend with my niece and nephew. I watched a lot of children's programming. And 90% of it is terrifying. So this stuff, I will say that this is, I didn't realize this was part of Disney XD.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
The stuff they do on Disney XD is actually pretty fantastic. That's like where Spider-Man and all the Marvel stuff comes out of. And this DuckTales looks really good. So I think this could be cool. I went in with the wrong preconceived notions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited just because, you know, those, for some reason there was like this weird, like, middle school block. I was watching like Chippendales and like DuckTales and like
Rescue Rangers.
Rescue Rangers. There was like this weird like block of, and they were all just really good. Maybe I don't know if they hold up still, but
was
I
it,
feel
what
like
was the other one? Was it
back then?
The Gummy Bears?
Gummy Bears. Yeah,
Gummy Bears might have older than that.
Oh,
yeah,
a little bit older,
bouncing but here and there and everywhere.
There's also like Muppet Babies, Animaniacs.
They are reviving Muppet Babies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's coming back.
Man,
is it going to be 3D? When it's 3D is when it's ruined.
I know. Why not just animate it? Like, that's that's not
3D
creepy.
Animation.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, 3D is a little weird.
Yeah.
The other quick bit of news is that the Pacific Rim sequel that we, at least me, have been praying actually was going to happen is obviously still happening.
That's cool. I like that movie. It's cool, man.
Good. Yeah. Well, it actually has a title now. It's called Uprising, and there are some plot details that aren't spoilers. Basically, it follows John Boyega as, I want to say, the son of Idris Elba from the first film. And I don't really know what's going on with the kaiju in this one, just that there's a whole new cast. No one's really coming back from what I understand. So no Charlie Day.
Didn't they all bail? Like they were.
They all bailed, and Guillermo is not directing, but he did create the story and I think part of the script.
Interesting.
And I'm excited for it. It's called Uprising. It's going to be out in 2018, so we still have some time. That's going to be a, well, let's see, 2017. Next year is the next Star Wars, and then so John Boyega is not going to have double films in the theaters. It's like it's a big couple years for John Boyega.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You know how you know it's December?
How?
Because we just keep talking about things that are going to come out next year.
Oh, geez.
Nothing's coming right now.
Yeah,
did you guys watch this Blade Runner 2049 trailer?
I did watch it.
Looks pretty cool.
It looks good, right? It's the right kind of mood. It's the right kind of setting.
I have a confession about Blade Runner.
Okay,
so I love the aesthetic of the film. I love aspects of the film. But not once in the 20 times that I've watched it have I stayed awake during Blade Runner.
I do remember it's a slow mover. I haven't seen it in a long time.
It's a lullaby for me. I don't know what it is. It's just like every time that movie comes on, I will pass out just like instantly.
Oh, it's for sure a slow burn. Like it is.
To the point where like I don't even remember, I think, like the middle of the movie. If you asked me what happened in the middle of Blade Runner right now, I probably couldn't tell you. Like, I have no idea. I know the beginning, I know the end pretty well, but the middle is a total blur. But this is pretty cool. You have you know, Harrison Ford coming back.
Yeah.
And you have, what's his name? Mr. Stud?
Ryan Gosling.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Stud is also his name.
Mr. Stud, I think, is his, like, that's what he also goes by.
Yeah. Yeah. The smolder. He does the smolder glance in all his films.
Yeah. Yes, he does. I'm a huge fan of the series, so I'm excited. I wasn't sure. There was a lot of like back and forth on this movie and then how involved Ridley Scott was going to be and what the story would be. And this came out and I was like, all right, you know, I mean, there's nothing much in the trailer, but
so far so good.
So far so good. You know, it's the right tone. Everything looked good. I'm pretty sure there was a dream sequence in there, which is awesome. So let's roll with it. I'm cool. I'm down.
Sounds great.
Blade Runner. I'm down too. It does visually look really awesome.
Yeah.
The smolder is in it. I saw it.
Like if they can Mad Max this up and nail the tone of the original, you know, like then yay.
Should we talk about like the what felt like 35 minutes of trailers that premiered before Rogue One?
Sure, we can.
I might have gotten a different trailer. What'd you guys see?
Oh my God.
I'm pretty stoked for Fast 8, man.
Fast 8 came on. Ash like looks over at me like giddy, like a school, you know, school kid. He's like, check it out.
Oh man, check it out. Fast 8. So good. There's a submarine chase.
Oh, we cried during the, did you guys get the one about the kid and the giant monster he creates?
No.
Oh, man, we both, Melissa and I both bawled during it. It's like some kid's, like, you know, his dad dies or something and he makes it was a heavy trailer.
We saw basically,
graphically, it was amazing looking. It looked incredible.
We saw like the same trailer maybe seven times. You know, we saw Fast 8, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Guy Ritchie's like King Arthur story. There was another Spider-Man.
Your favorite Transformers.
Oh, Transformers, like the Last Duke or whatever it's called. And yeah. Yeah, but it was all the same. And I feel like all the trailers, like, remember a few years ago when Inception was really popular and every trailer used that, like, wow. Yeah, now they use the siren where it's like, wow, wow. You know, you know what I'm talking about? Like, that is the most annoying sound in the world to me.
Will I tell you, that's why I sort of enjoyed the Blade Runner trailer.
Because it didn't use that noise?
It had that weird glitchy, like, it sounded really, it was like perfect for that trailer.
That's the first thing I noticed about the trailer was the music. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can't wait, you know, for the next 2 or 3 years from now when we hear a different weird sound effect in all of our movie trailers. Yeah.
Hopefully it's a kazoo.
Or a vuvuzela or something. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. Maybe all of our movies will get brighter. In the future for some reason or another, but
I love Guy Ritchie, but that trailer looks terrible.
Oh, for that night, it just looks like whatever, you know, like
it just looks like Guy Ritchie was like, what if I made a night movie but I didn't change anything about how I make movies?
Like, sure,
it's like straight up Guy Ritchie with swords.
Yep
Yeah, wait, which one did he do? Did he do Uncle or Kingsman?
He did
Uncle, Man from Uncle.
Oh, I did like Man from Uncle though.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I love Guy Ritchie, but that movie just it looks wrong.
Yeah,
it might be great. Who knows? But we saw the Skull Island trailer again, which goddamn
beautiful, huh?
If that movie is a tenth as good as that trailer is edited, like that'll be a great movie.
Yeah, I can't wait.
But the thing about
we also saw Planet of the Apes.
Oh, that was the other one. Yeah, Planet of the Apes.
Hoo boy.
Yeah.
I've heard those are really good, but they're hammering on those allegories pretty heavy at this point.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll talk about it later. It's heavy, guys. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
But I mean, like, you know, if you saw half of the Guy Ritchie King Arthur trailer and then halfway through someone stopped it and they were like, okay, is this going to be, you know, the sequel to the current Snow White movie? Or is this going to be, you know, something different? I don't think I could tell you which one it was, you know?
Yeah.
Like is this like the Huntsman sequel or is it not?
I'd be
like
three.
I'd be like, I don't know, I can't tell. Anyways, movies. So what was the last bit of news? Oh, the last bit of news is that if you are thinking about buying a new Xbox One game digitally, I can tell you that they are advertising now that they're gonna have sales starting up again in 2 days, which is probably gonna be when this podcast comes out. So just something to keep an eye on. Just a quick note that starting on that would be Thursday, starting on Thursday, they're going to fire up the sales again, just like they did during Black Friday, Cyber Monday. So, and I see that there's some new stuff in there, like Watch Dogs and Dead Rising 4 are advertised in their little trailer. So I would expect at least some kind of discount on those titles, which is hard.
$7 off.
Yeah, but the thing that is hard is that it is easier to find a deal on a physical copy of a game than it is to find one.
Bummer, isn't it?
Yeah, and even harder, like, man, if you buy a game separately from the season pass and you want that season pass, you're never going to get it on sale. Like, season passes separately never go on sale, and that's the hard part about buying digital is that
to be fair though, season passes are sort of a sale on piecemealing your DRM or DLC.
Sorry. Right. Yes. Because you're combining them and sort of getting a deal. But
yeah,
the problem is that
not
every game has great season pass content, you know?
Correct.
Like Ubi's formula for season pass content lately has been a few items, one really good piece of extra story content, and then just kind of like some filler side quests and stuff like that. And then they kind of bundle it all together and make it sound like it's a whole experience, but really it's just the one story mission is the thing that you want, you know? So is that $40? I don't know. It's hard to say. But anyways, like digital sales, and a lot of people want to buy digital now. So that's, you know, that's kind of the key here, right? Is that, you want to make the most out of your dollar. And so the end of this week, which would, you know, that's the right time. The sale's going to run through the 9th. So presumably when everybody gets, you know, Xboxes for Christmas or
new
whatever,
Xbox.
Yeah. Or gift cards or whatever it is, like this is where you spend it. So,
Yep.
Just a little update for everyone. Heads up.
This is Freddie Prinz Jr., and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
So, guys.
Rogue One.
Rogue One.
I never thought that we would live in an age where this happened.
Right?
Well, the reason I say that is because I mentioned this to Scott briefly when we were eating tacos this afternoon. It's like, you know, our whole lives, essentially, we've had Star Wars in our brains, right? Since we were little kids.
Yes.
And we know the story of Episode 4, A New Hope, you know, backwards and forwards. We've probably seen it 100 times.
Yeah.
And we know it very, very well. And then all of a sudden, this movie comes out that essentially adds a whole first chapter to that film. Seeing the Empire and seeing everything from a whole new light was really just strange to me and exciting, you know.
I could never imagine that not only would we get new, you know, like main story films in this series, but now we're actually going to get other films that tell different stories. You know, it's not just going to be following sort of the, you know, to use a video game term, it's not the critical path we're following anymore. We're kind of like now we're getting side quests, which is, I never would have expected that in a million years to be able to go to the theater and not, you know, we're not talking about Luke Skywalker or the Skywalker family. We're talking about, you know, like things that you would read in a book, but instead of reading it in a book, you actually get to see it on the screen. And like, I remember being a kid and reading those books, which are now, you know, the old EU, which is now the Legacy series, and thinking like, man, I would watch this if it were a film. Like I would watch, you know, follow on stories about the, you know, General Thrawn or Admiral Thrawn or, you know, Mara Jade or Force Witches or any of that stuff, you know, and now we get to see. Right. Yeah. And it's amazing to think that you can also look at A New Hope and take maybe three lines of dialogue from that movie and from that create an entirely different movie, right? Because that's really all they had to go on, right? It's like maybe three or four lines of dialogue that would kind of hint at what is happening in this film. And that's kind of exciting too.
Right, right. So for our listener out there that maybe doesn't know what exactly Rogue One is, someone who perhaps is not a Star Wars fan, how would you even describe this movie to them?
I would say that, I mean, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that it tells a story of, you know, how they stole the plans for the Death Star. Is that in bounds, I think?
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. That's in the trailer. Yeah, stuff.
I don't think that's out of bounds. But I mean, in a very broad sense, I would almost categorize it as almost like a war film, sort of, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Or a heist film.
Yeah. Or like a heist or something.
Yeah. A little bit of both of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess I should also ask you guys, did you guys like the film?
Yes.
No. Because there are people, you know, in my social media feeds that are like giving this a thumbs down and stuff for one reason or another. Yeah, it's odd, and it's people that I like normally gel with. So I was kind of a little apprehensive going in, just because I was like, man, like what if, you know, I had the episode one like fear, like I was gonna go in and then all of a sudden leave and like feel like someone kicked me in the dick, you know. I obviously enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought it was really fun. I thought the second half of the film was better than the first half of the film. That's just because the second half of the film is bonkers insane. I mean, it just ramps up to the nth degree, to the point where you're just like, my brain almost couldn't absorb the amount of things going on, because it was just so much. Like, it's the type of thing that you could watch. Yeah, especially the last, I want to say 35, 40 minutes, you could watch frame by frame and every frame could be a painting. You know, it's just, it's insane.
Well, there's a lot of very, so what felt like to me, without knowing some of the characters going in, there's a lot of very quick ramp up in that first half of the movie, right? So they introduce a lot of characters very quickly. They assume that you may already know a lot of those characters without even sort of, you know, like Forrest Whitaker's character, they give you nothing, really. They're just like, he's a guy. And like, come to find out, he's deeply embedded in like a few of the narratives that have already existed, right? I think he was in
Clone Wars stuff, yeah.
Yeah, he was in Clone Wars stuff. Like, he had shown up before. So there's some of that, like, which is kind of nice. It's kind of nice that they're not trying to origin story every single person you run into. So I think that's what made that first half feel a little, like, unbalanced, was they were moving through they're moving through locations and characters so quickly, and you just had to kind of keep up and assume that you knew what was going on. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think that's what maybe tilted it off. But yeah, that second half of the film is the whole third act is just like, it's insane. It's so, it reminds me not in specifics, but in the same sort of feeling you got from Saving Private Ryan or something along those lines, where you're just like, holy shit, like the stuff that's going on right now is so heavy and so like big and cinematic. And like, it felt like a really great action movie in those moments. So.
No, yeah. I agree. And I was telling Scott the first time that it made, you know, blaster fire looked like it hurt like hell. Mm-hmm. Like when you saw guys getting hit by blasters, it was just like, holy cow. Like that is actually, you know, it made it feel much more grounded in reality, the way that the impacts looked and the way the characters reacted when they were hit. And, I thought that was fantastic too, because the war scenes were just, you know, very, very gritty, very visceral. You know, kind of scary. Like there are a couple scenes where you're just like, oh man, like this is intense. Like just, like you said, like Saving Private Ryan.
I came out with a new favorite Star Wars character too.
Oh yeah, is it Alan Tudyk?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
K2SO is fantastic, man.
Wasn't he great? Oh my god,
he was so wonderful through the whole thing. Like, and I won't spoil any punchlines, but he was like, it wasn't even comic relief all the time. It was just so good, like the whole way through the movie. I was like, god damn, he's such a great character.
I feel like he's definitely HK inspired. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. But yeah, he was great. And honestly, like the whole crew, like Matt said, they don't have the Jyn Erso is the only one who gets even any semblance of an origin story within
even
the film.
Hers is a little
right.
A little
and I'm fine. I'm fine with that. Like the fact that, you know, we just kind of get to know them over the course of the narrative, and then it's over, and you're just like, oh shit. Like, but then you kind of want to go back and just explore, you know, the nuance of the performance and kind of get to know these characters through repeat viewings, because it's like, it shovels you with just so much, so many aliens, so many different weapons and vehicles. And just like, I mean, I would venture to say that there's more new stuff in this than I want to say any single Star Wars film, like new stuff that I haven't seen, like stormtroopers and crazy vehicles. It was just insane.
There's a lot to take in. And I think I mentioned it on a previous podcast, but I'm currently listening to the Rogue One Catalyst, which is sort of a prequel novel to this film. And that book features it focuses heavily on Jyn Erso's parents, as well as Orson Krennic, who is the sort of the Imperial in white in the film, right? So it was interesting because for me coming into this film, I had a lot of kind of foresight into what was already happening. Which is weird because when I started listening, I was listening to audiobook, and I'm about 75% of the way through it now, and I was really kind of getting bored by it. But now having seen the movie, I feel like it actually makes the book more interesting, which
humanized some of those characters.
Yeah, and it's not what I expected. I thought like, oh, I need to listen to this book so that when I go see the movie, I'm like ready to go. But I feel like you could see the movie and then go back and read the book, and I feel like that would almost be a better experience for most people, in my opinion, just based on what it is, because I was trying to get to know some of these characters, you know, in route through the book, but just to see the movie and then go back and listen to the book, you're like, oh, okay, now this all makes sense. But
I really think it's origin story fatigue, right? Like we see origin stories over and over and over and over and over again. They're always setting up huge movie trilogies. And this movie really got to be, you know, by force. Oh, hey.
Hey.
It is a standalone, and they don't have to worry about, you know, Rogue One, Two, or whatever. Like there is no more, like, this movie will be its own set piece, and whatever happens in it happens, and it leads up to a thing that already exists, and it came out of an era that already exists. So all they had to do was tell a really great story. And I think, you know, you don't have time to do origins for 15 characters when that's the case. And that's what I think made the movie so fun and refreshing. You know, it was just like, oh man, we're just in this world. Let's do this. I'm in, you know?
Yeah. There's just enough of a world built up around it that you don't have to explain the world, but you also don't have to explain the characters either. They can just kind of exist, and there's no rules. I think that's what makes it exciting for some people. And maybe that's part of the reason why other people don't like it, is that, you know, because you're not following the critical path. This is a side quest, and you can do whatever you want with the side quest. You can tell whatever story you want, right? So that's equally exciting as well. But that being said, you know, going back to what you mentioned earlier, like, there are characters that appear in this film where you know, I'm going to need like a comic book or a spinoff novel or something, because I just need to know more about some of these characters. And I think we all know who we're talking about, but
Donnie Yen's character.
Yeah. I don't want to
just unbelievable. Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, we'll give anything away, but he's just fantastic. And, you know, it takes the universe in a completely different direction than what you're ever used to seeing. Right.
It raises so many questions.
I would absolutely read a comic series or love to see them show up on a TV show or whatever it might be.
I think a lot of people are going to walk away from that film going like, you just can't say what you just said, and then just walk away from it and pretend like you didn't just say that. You know what I mean?
Which fuck Disney if that's their plan the whole time. You know, like, now we're going to sell you books and comics. Like,
well, I'm already listening to those books, right? So that's fine, you know, because I need something to do in the car.
Like, if they're so brilliant at storytelling that they know that they can put this movie out, and then you'll be like, oh crap, now I have to consume everything about Star Wars. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because the main trilogies, because the main trilogies are such, you know, intrinsically like created worlds, and they're like, you can just watch those and be like, aha, a satisfying movie. And like, now they're going to put these other ones out where they just mention and throw away things. And you're like, what? What is that? What is that thing over there? And it was awesome.
Yeah,
let's talk quickly without spoiling anything about the performances. I just thought, you know, I don't know. I was telling Scott this at lunch. I don't know anything about Felicity Jones, but I felt that she was an awesome lead. I love Jyn Erso. I want more Jyn Erso. I want like Jyn Erso tramp stamp. I thought she was great. I do not to get into heavy conversation, but I felt that, you know, the diversity of the cast was awesome to see. I felt that, you know, I love having these female leads in these powerful roles, and it was believable. It didn't seem like she was a Mary Sue at all. I felt like she was a believable badass. I loved seeing her in action, you know, and she wasn't like to the point where it was fantastical, you know, she was just a person. She was just a person that like happened to be pretty good at taking care of herself. And I thought that that was a great person as a lead in a Star Wars film, because we're so used to having like, you know, the ultra hero force sensitive badass, you know what I mean? That can like throw X-Wings around and crap. But, this was great.
That's,
what do you guys think of the rest of them?
Oh, I thought, you know, obviously I think folks will, I mean, I really enjoyed Felicity Jones' performance as well. I think something that surprised me was Diego Luna's performance.
Yeah, incredible. I thought he was great in the whole thing.
Yeah, just because when you feel like you can buy into a character, right? I think that's how you know when it's working. And even though we barely knew anything about many of the characters in this film, I felt like I could buy into all of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, him in particular, his character is sort of very, I think his character lives in this sort of gray space, right? And so, you know, it's hard to like him. You're not sure if you're supposed to like him. But overall, the performance is compelling enough where you're still invested in what's happening with his character. So that was kind of like a standout for me, aside from the obvious ones.
I think Tudyk was a standout, obviously. But
he's great.
He was so wonderful through the whole thing. I actually thought, I just looked him up, but Ben Mendelsohn, who played Krennic,
was
such a great, I won't even put him into a specific archetype. I think just he played such a great Imperial like commander guy, if that makes sense. Right. Like you truly believed that he believed not only in himself and you know, had that ego, but also in what he was doing. You know what I mean? Like, it was this weird take on, like, they didn't gray area the Empire, you know, totally, but they did more than I think they do in other movies. I don't think they've really ever placed it in a way where they would say things that made you feel like, oh, wait, what does the Empire think they're doing, kind of thing.
Yes.
Versus the Rebellion, you know? And since this is such an early stage in the Rebellion's life, it was really... it was interesting to see a guy be able to play it and like lean into that role like that.
Yeah. So. Well, what I can tell you is that you would probably, if you liked Krennic a lot, you would probably like Catalyst, because the thing about
in paperback, honestly.
Oh, okay.
I think I got Comic-Con possibly.
Oh, good. Yeah. The thing about Catalyst is that it is not a traditional Star Wars novel, and I think all these books may have been written by the same person, but if you enjoyed the story of the Darth Plagueis book or the book about Tarkin, you would like Catalyst as well, because it's not, these aren't action heavy books. They're more about political intrigue and in conversations and kind of like, you know, posturing and maneuvering and subterfuge and stuff like that. So it's more about sort of the, almost like the business end of running the empire, you know what I mean? And what that's all about.
Right.
And the thing I was telling Ash earlier is that there are also in the book are embedded sort of some interesting discussions like about the Jedi, you know, and sort of opinions about, you know, why they fell and what they could have done differently and how they could have been better. And it's not, it kind of makes everything a little more gray. It's not just so, you know, good and evil, because everyone sort of believes in what they're doing and everyone sort of is entitled to an opinion. And you really get a sense of what motivates Krennic's character in the film by what happens in the book, because it does sort of follow heavily, you know, his life just as much as it does Jin's parents. So I think that's fascinating too. The only other thing I would add very quickly is that Jin's father, Galen Erso, I can only see Lashif. Like it's so hard for me not to see that. Like after watching Casino Royale like 100 times. That like I feel bad. I feel like I don't mean to disparage his performance, but like I just see Lashif. Like that's hard for me. So
So I think we're gonna at some point do a spoiler full review where we actually kind of break down some of the specific stuff that we like. So keep an eye peeled for that. But Rogue One spoiling us. You know, it's crazy that it's here.
The only other thing I wanted to add in really quick is that, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, doing something you're passionate about and finding your way kind of through this nerdy culture world. But the screen, you know who wrote the screenplay, right? Or co-wrote it, I think?
No.
Was it Gary Whitta?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's a nerd done good. That's a guy who started at PC Gamer, I think. And then
he wrote video games, and
then now he's writing a fucking screenplay for Star Wars. So
unbelievable, like, right? You know,
it's just one of those. I just wanted to bring it up because we always kind of talk about these like people who find a thing and do it. And I think that's actually kind of amazing that it's a guy who kind of came from our world and is now writing a Star Wars screenplay. So
yeah, I've been following him on Twitter for like literally for like 5 years, and he still just tweets about games all the time. And
oh yeah, yeah.
This was like a huge, huge deal for him, obviously. But you know, I think a lot of these characters were his creation, so that's pretty fantastic.
Cool, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, that was it. It's terrible, crazy. Everybody. Cancel your tickets and don't go.
That's
the only thing Matt messaged us with. I was like, is he serious? I'm like, he can't be serious. I'm like, I don't want to hear anything more.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to just, I told Melissa, I was like, if I just say like, guys, it's good, like it'll just annoy Scott. And I was like, so what I'm going to do is just say, don't go. You should cancel your tickets. It's
terrible. That's hilarious. I will say that, you know, there's a new character that I'm really excited about in this film. And I know I don't need to tell you who that character is.
Yeah,
but I just hope that I hope I can secure some toys sooner rather than later.
All I kept staring at was his chin.
Oh my god, I was just I got giddy just to see him. I was like, oh my god, this is happening. This is a thing. This is great. So yeah, but I don't think that character is a spoiler, because apparently they unveiled the action figure for that character at New York Comic Con a few months ago. So, but anyways, we'll talk about it in our spoiler.
Review. I'm going to spoil it. There's a Mon Calamari in the film, everybody.
Yeah, that's spoiler. That shouldn't be surprising if you saw the original trilogy.
Oh, no one's going to go see the movie now.
Yeah, we hate fish people. Ugh.
Oh. Anyways, should we move on or?
Let's do it.
Okay. Let's see. What's next? Final thoughts about Telltale's Batman Episode 5. So I think I talked about it plenty in the last episode, but now I've played the last episode and completed the story. Regarding episode 5 specifically, I feel like they maybe had to rush a little bit to put a bow on a couple of things to get everything squared away in this season 1 of this series, which is fine. But the thing that I will add now, having played this episode and considering everything as a whole, that I think that by far this is Telltale's best execution of combat in one of their games. So I cool. do, yeah, I do think now that that is sort of the maybe gameplay or technical highlight of this series, that that is their major improvement over their previous series, is that not only are the fights choreographed very well, like the action sequences are interesting, the way that they're, I guess, for lack of a better word, the cinematography of it, the way that it's composed is interesting. And then there are even cases in which you get to sort of influence how certain sequences in the combat play out, which is really exciting. And even though there's limited choice in what you're able to do, still having just a little bit of choice and how you put that together really makes it more immersive in how you participate in the combat. And of course, being the season finale of the game, everything's sort of ratcheted up, and it's ended up being very satisfying in the end, even though I feel like every Telltale series has like one episode which is sort of like the filler, the down episode, and this one certainly does that too. But I think overall it is certainly a worthy entry in their portfolio of games, and one that's worth playing, especially if you're interested in sort of the more dynamic aspects of, you know, their games, including the combat and the, of course, the detective work as playing as Batman. So
it's another win for Telltale.
Yeah, I think this one overall is a win. And like, you know, we discussed at length, you know, Batman lore in general. And I think if you're willing to either embrace it, look past it, calibrate your expectations, whatever, then you can certainly get on board with this game just as you would any of the other Telltale games. So that's really exciting. Mm. I think the last thing that we were going to talk about today was Super Mario Run, which was sort of highly publicized and maybe the first time I ever went into the App Store and saw like a button to say, tell me when this is available, which...
Yeah, I think it was. And then they screwed that up. Did you hear about that?
I didn't hear about it, but I do know that I downloaded the game before I got the notification that it was ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they basically, the notification didn't go out until like very late that day, and most people had already downloaded it.
Yeah, I think I was able to download the game at like 2 p.m. Eastern, and I got the email at 8:30. And why an email, by the way? Like if this is my, if this is only on iPhone and I hit the button on my iPhone in the App Store to tell me when it's available, why not just push me a message to my screen, you know, the lock screen?
It is a confusing system.
Well, I mean, I think that as far as confusing systems go, like Nintendo and Apple are like a match made in heaven, right?
Yeah.
If you're talking about, you know, oddly, you know, systems that are on the surface appear to be simplistic, but, you know, down below are actually more complicated than they need to be, then I think they have a great partnership here, right? Anyways, Super Mario Run is, originally I thought it was going to be an endless runner, but it's not quite that. It's almost like...
It's close, though.
But it's not endless, right? That's the thing. Right. It's like Mario just runs automatically, and the levels are abbreviated, and because Mario runs automatically, it kind of tilts the traditional gameplay on its head a little bit compared to like what you would normally play in your standard Super Mario game. Yeah. So I don't know. What did you think? Because I played a lot of it and I feel like you guys did not play as much. So what are your initial impressions of Super Mario Run?
Did you play it all, Ash?
Yeah, I played a little bit.
Oh, you did? Okay. I thought I didn't. I thought you didn't.
I mean, like 20 minutes. My initial impression is it's Mario, but it's also an endless runner. And that's, I don't necessarily love playing them anymore. Like that's not really why I play games on my tablet. So it just wasn't for me. And I'm also, you know me, I don't give a shit about platformers.
Yeah, you're like,
Yeah, I'm like not the audience for this, but I thought it looked very pretty. Mm. It definitely felt like Mario, which is, you know, which is what it is.
How about you, Matt?
It reminded me a lot of Jetpack Joyride. Did you ever play that?
Yeah, I played a lot of it, actually.
I did, too. Yeah, I played a ton of Jetpack Joyride and really enjoyed it, which is why I think I didn't dive into Super Mario Run super heavy, because it kind of felt, with the exception of it feeling very much, it's weird. It took a thing that I'm super familiar with, and it felt very much to that point of being Super Mario, and then combined it with another thing that I'm super familiar with, which is Jetpack Joyride, and then put it together, and it kind of just didn't wow me, I guess, at the end of the day. I was just kind of like, oh, two things I already kind of know.
Yes.
And to be honest, the mechanic, I can't wait to hear what you think about this mechanic, because it frustrated the shit out of me that I couldn't go backwards. Mm-hmm. So you are a completionist, and I'm really dying to know how you feel about a game that is like actively keeping you from being completionist in that game. Like,
you mean prevents you from, like, you sort of constantly pushes you forward. Is that what you mean?
Meaning that, like, you're going to miss coins, right? Like, there's almost no way to 100% a level each time, is there?
No, but I mean, like, I think as far as completing the game goes, it's really about every level has a set of, like, special coins that you need to collect. So there's, like, five pink
of all colors. Yeah, why are they pink?
I don't know. There's five pink coins in every level. And then once you do that, like, you can play the level again, and there's five purple coins. And once you do that, you can play the level again, and there's five black coins in every level. So that's kind of the path to completionists in Super Mario Run, right?
Do they move? Is like the
yes. So as you might imagine, the challenge gets more difficult as you the black coins require you to do, you know, either things, they're either better hidden throughout the level, or they require you to get to paths that are harder to get to, or to do some kind of platforming that may be tricky or time based. So there are, you know, are some coins that
once you go to the black coins, can you go back to the other coins?
You can never go back.
So why do you? Yeah, okay, there you go.
Yeah, you can never go back. Okay. No, you can do whatever you want. You can flip back and forth, which is interesting. So I don't know. Maybe I should get into a little bit of the nuts and bolts of it. You know, for the audience.
To close out my little mini review.
Go ahead.
I think the last thing that the thing that I was sort of excited about was the opposite of Ash, which is like, oh, maybe it is, maybe it's a time sink infinite runner with Mario, where you can kind of just play forever kind of thing. And that is, it's not. It's very, it feels like classic Mario. You just can't go backwards. Like,
oh, no. What I felt like. Yeah, there's certainly an end to this game. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't play it enough to hit the paywall. So,
yes. Why do you think you people are reviewing it poorly? Why do you think it's like its user reviews are not doing that well?
I think this is like sort of the blessing and the curse of Mario is that you can't change that formula too much, or else it won't be a Mario game anymore. But but by staying on script, right, you create a game that is a very solid 7, but is not going to be a 9 or a 10 as far as a Mario game goes, right? This also being their first entry of a game like this on the iPhone, I feel like they kind of needed to kick the can down the road a little bit for people that may have never played a Mario game before for some reason or another. So I think they needed to play it safe, and in playing it safe, they got scores that played it safe. I think that's kind of how it all went down, right? Like Matt mentioned, the game is very finite in the sense where the levels themselves are not very long. If you're not interested in completing, you know, doing the coin challenges for each level, I feel like you'd be able to get through this game very quickly. You can play, I think there are 6 quote unquote worlds. Each world has 4 levels. The free version of the game allows you to complete the first 3 levels, and then it'll sort of let you do a demo of the boss level. And as far as I know, there are 6 levels. Traditionally, you know, every Mario game gives you the old, like, hey, you beat the game, but you really didn't, because here's another set of levels. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they're, you know, if they added a 7th world or something, or one just magically appeared or whatever. But, you know, the game is sort of limited. And I think part of the other reason why it's not being scored very well might not actually be the main part of the game, but the stuff that's attached to it. So I don't think either of you saw this, but there's another mode in the game called, I think it's called Toad Rally or Mario.
I got it. Rally mode.
Rally mode. Yeah. So there's a world tour, which is like your traditional, you know, going through the levels and reaching the flag and everything like that. But then there's a different mode called Rally, which is a asynchronous online competitive mode where you and the ghost of another player run through a level, which is endless, but is time limited, where you compete against the other person to collect as many coins as possible. And not only are you trying to collect coins, you're trying to do it sort of stylishly in the game. And that sort of boosts your, I don't know, they make it seem like there are crowds of toads watching you perform the level. And so the more elegantly you perform the level, the more toads you get to view your performance. And then the person that gets the most coins gets toads recruited to their profile, for lack of a better word. And then the toads you recruit to your profile are then used in sort of the third quote unquote game mode, which is just a decorating sim. So the main menu screen is like a picture of Peach's castle, which is all kind of like destroyed, you know, because she was abducted, of course. And you can sort of, the meta game is that you can use your coins to buy things to sort of rebuild like the kingdom and the area around the kingdom. And so I think for a lot of people, that's like a huge turnoff, because it's just kind of like a micromanagement sim kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because that's, I don't know that they had to give you a purpose for collecting the coins. I feel like that's, you know, no Mario game has ever been like, you collected 100 coins, now you can cash those in for an ice cream cone. Right. But yeah, that's what you do. So like recruiting, like, so you have to compete in the rally to get the toads, because the toads unlock more items that you can then buy with your coins to put on your kingdom level. And I think people are frustrated by that because not only is the toad rally, it can be challenging and difficult to even win, but when you lose toads, so you lose that progress towards unlocking more items. And you're also limited in how many times you can participate in the rally, because you need like a disposable currency called game tickets to compete in there.
Yeah.
And so you can earn tickets by completing levels and collecting all the coins. You can earn tickets, I think, by using like a bonus house, which you get for free, which appears in your kingdom. And you can use that like once every 8 hours. But you can also buy more tickets. And I think a lot of people are curious as to why they paid $10 for a game and then don't have access to all of the features in the game.
And that's sort of what I was going to say is I'd be willing to bet that Nintendo thinks they're selling a really, really ridiculously cheap Mario game.
Mm-hmm.
And that iPhone users think that they're buying a very, very expensive iPhone game.
Yes.
Yep. Like, yes. I think that like those two groups are not going to align at any point in time. Like no one pays $10 for games on the iPhone regularly.
Right.
Like that's an expensive leap. And then to put in-purchase stuff or in-app purchase stuff like behind your paywall is even more baffling at that point. So I think it's just, and like, I'm not even knocking them. I truly believe Nintendo's probably like, this is the cheapest Mario experience you're ever going to get. Like, we're never going to sell a $9.99 Mario anywhere, you know?
Right.
So I feel like there's just two, I think that's probably the heart of a lot of the ratings is like people going like, what the fuck? Like, this isn't, I'm not paying for this, you know?
I think if they came in at $4.99, it would be like gangbusters, right?
Yeah, I think they overreached. I think they thought Mario, you know, is Mario. They can do whatever they want with Mario, and they're not going to. And honestly, I bet I'm borderline willing to bet there were marketing talks that said if we put it at $4.99, it devalues the brand.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure. Yeah, I'm right there. Yeah,
probably.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the weird thing, right? Is that, you know, okay. So let me say this. The game, I think visually is very good. Mechanically, I actually like, I mean, I'm not a fan of constantly running forward, but I get it. But what impresses me is mechanically how much you can do just by tapping the screen one time, because it's not just like tap the screen to jump. You use that mechanic to execute a bunch of different moves depending on where the character is within the environment, right? So there is a simplicity in how you manipulate the game, but then there's a lot of nuance in how you actually get through some of these levels, because you can do a wall jump, and you can, when you wall jump, you reverse direction. You kind of, not completely, it's like rubber banding. So if you do wall jump, you'll go the other way, but then the character slowly turns around to get their momentum going back, you know, left to right again. There's a sort of a grip mechanic, which is new. So if you jump at a block and hit the side of the block, they'll actually kind of grasp onto the side of the block and then pull themselves up automatically. The characters also automatically mantle over enemies and over small gaps. Something that is in a traditional Mario game, or at least the more modern ones, is that like once you jump in the air, you can hit jump again. You kind of execute a spin move that keeps your height up for like a slightly longer amount of time. So if you need to collect extra coins, you kind of tap once to jump, and then you hit it again. You do a little spin, you float a little bit. So there's a lot under the hood, which is really impressive. There's also additional characters that you can play as. Some of those you get from linking your Nintendo account. Apparently there's a way to play as your Mii. I haven't found it yet. You can play as some of the like classic SMB2 characters like Luigi and Peach, and you know, Peach has her hover mechanic. But again, the problem is that if you want to play as those other characters, you need to add their homes to the castle screen, which requires you to have coins and also requires you to play Toad Rally. So we all kind of like circle back again to this problem with the additional limitations on the game, which is, you know, very frustrating. And if you're a person that doesn't like co-op, if you don't like competitive mode, then you're kind of stuck with just playing as Mario,
the base game.
Yeah, playing as Mario, playing the 24 levels they have, and then like that's kind of the end of your experience. And for $10, that's a hard sell on the iPhone. Absolutely.
But I don't think it's like, to clarify, I don't think either side is wrong.
No,
Nintendo made an extremely polished iPhone game. Like, yes, this game, like, you're not wrong. All of the mechanics work perfectly. They thought out even the smallest of details. Like, they block off the bottom, like, I don't know, eighth or tenth of the screen for tapping.
For your finger. Like, yeah.
There's brilliant. No weird, you don't have to like figure out where to put your thumb so that you can tap and still see what's going on. Like, they clearly thought through this game like deeply, and with the same care they would put towards any Mario game. So I know for them, it's like, this is a value that we think is right.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know as an iPhone user, and I'll throw Hearthstone under this, before I knew Hearthstone was like multi-platform, you know, when I was just playing on my iPad or on my iPhone, like $24 for a single storyline in Hearthstone is a ludicrous price to pay on an iPhone.
Yes.
To play a game. Like, that's insanity. Like, and if you bought every Hearthstone story that exists, you've given them, what is it? Probably $125 at this point.
Yeah. I think there's a couple that don't exist. Like, they discontinued them, but I think there were a couple older ones. Yeah.
I mean, you're easily over 100, I guess is what I'm saying. So it's like, it's weird to watch these game companies get into the mobile space and then still charge non-mobile prices, and like seeing how that works, and seeing that like all of a sudden when they're dealing with a rating system that's built into the thing that you buy the game in, you know, like it all of a sudden gets noisier, and it's a very weird to watch. So like, I guess what I'm saying is neither side is wrong. They made a really awesome game, but $10 with in-app purchase just feels like, it seems like if $10 just unlocked a bunch of things, you know, or the majority of it, then maybe it would be less of an issue. I don't know.
I think the question that people are asking is why are you limited in how you can play Toad Rally, how you can do the online competitive mode? Like, why are you limited in that? Why can't I just sit there? Maybe they don't want people to grind it out, but I feel like that's unfair to players that are maybe playing more casually, but still want to unlock those additional characters because they just want to play for fun.
Yeah.
Currently there's no other way to get them. You can't even pay to unlock them. My personal opinion is that Nintendo will probably relax some of the restrictions on the game if they see that the performance of the game is not really up to par, which I feel like it's not. Just based on, you know, my very limited sample of, you know, people I'm friends with on Twitter, I remember when Miitomo launched, there were at least 10 people that played it. And now, you know, that shelf life of that game was like 2 weeks, but you know, I linked my Twitter to this game right away, and I go and search for friends and I see nobody. I feel like that's a bad sign for, you know, for the game launch.
It's like they took the wrong lessons from Pokemon Go, which was like, oh, in-app purchases work, and they do, but like Pokemon Go also lets you fully explore that game and play and capture Pokemon without spending a dollar. So it's like a weird, it's like they were like, oh, well, but this one's Mario, so we, you know, like, we'll charge 10 here, and then people will still buy all this stuff in the back. And like, it's probably just a weird kerfuffle at Nintendo right now. Who knows?
Let's talk about something else too, which is, I did pay the $10 to unlock the game. I know we just had a long discussion about paying $10, but I'm kind of at a place right now where I have kind of lost interest in playing games on the iPhone because, you know, and I'm not just talking about achievements. I like to play games now that are sort of connected to a larger ecosystem. You know, so like you mentioned with Hearthstone, like you play that game on your phone, but you can also sit down on your PC and play it. You can also connect with your friends and play against them.
Right.
You know, Microsoft just recently put out a solitaire game, you know, the same Windows 10 game, but on the iOS, and you can unlock achievements in that game and you're connected to that profile. Super Mario Run, if you want to, will connect to your My Nintendo profile, which you can use to, you know, sync your game progress. It'll save, you know, if you ever delete it and put it on a different device.
Right.
My Nintendo uses like a new rewards program that they phased in earlier this year. And so you can sort of work on progress towards earning stuff on their reward site. So I just kind of like to play games that are at least part of an ecosystem because I feel like it's sort of contributing to something larger. I don't know if you guys realize this, but I feel like I think Apple phased out Game Center. It's not there anymore. So
I never noticed that.
Yeah, exactly. And so
like, I mean, it was a pretty poorly thought out product in the first place.
Yeah, but I mean, but that was kind of like the only metagame for the iOS that they had, right?
Right.
And I think that when they decided like this isn't working, I think in doing that they kind of opened up, you know, some whatever legal or technical, you know, they kind of gave permission to people like Nintendo, Microsoft to go like, okay, you can bring your systems onto this platform now and like allow people to connect in that way. And so
I actually think that the winner out of all of that was probably Facebook, to be honest.
Oh, for their games?
For iPhone games, like a lot of them you can connect to Facebook and they have, that's where it will like centralize your data and like show your friends and that's how you compete. And like that, it all goes through Facebook.
Yeah. And I mean, so I guess for me buying this is like, I feel like I'm still in the Nintendo ecosystem.
Right.
I don't really know what the justification is for it, but I just like to play games within an ecosystem. And I feel like I've already played so many iOS games that I don't want to say I've seen it all, but I feel like I've seen a lot of it and I just don't really have the time or interest to do that anymore. So, knowing that I can take Nintendo with me, I can take Xbox with me, that adds value to the game for me. And so for me, because the game was highly polished and because, you know, I can play it with some, degree of competitiveness online, I decided to go ahead and buy it. So, again, that's certainly not for everybody. So I know it's a hard sell. Yep.
Cool. I mean, it's fun. Like, look, you can download it for free. You'll get an hour of entertainment out of it. Easy.
Oh, you should absolutely play those three levels and try to get all those coins. Like, that is absolutely fun. And it costs $0. You should do that.
It costs $0 and it's super fun. Like, if your bailout is because it's $10 to get the rest of it, totally understood and no questions asked, you know, but yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise it's a, you know, the mechanic, like the gameplay, high quality. Well, I think we found a place to end it then.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening to episode 254 of the Rated NA podcast. You can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. Say hi to us there. You can email us directly, and that is Matt, Scott, or Ash at NerdAppropriate.com. If you have a general question, you can send it to nerds@NerdAppropriate.com. We are all over the internet from YouTube to Instagram all the way on over to Twitch.tv/NerdAppropriate. So look
I'm
for us there.
I'm following us on Twitch now.
Crazy. I need to actually stream
out how to
again.
Do that. I set it up and I said, I'm going to follow Nerd Appropriate.
Do it. And if you have an Xbox One, we have a club there called Nerd Appropriate. So search for us there. Send us a request and we will add you to our club. And we'll be playing some stuff together soon so you can play with us.
We'll probably be sharing a bunch of dumb clips from Forza Horizon 3 is probably what you'll what you'll see at the present time. But feel free to share whatever you all want too. If you get a cool achievement or do something awesome in a game, post it there. And I mean, that's kind of
we'll look at it.
Yeah, just have fun. Yeah.
Awesome. And we'll perhaps be doing a spoiler full look at Rogue One. So keep your eye on your feed for that. And we'll be back next week with an all new show.
Hooray.
Yeah.
See you guys. Yay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
My Echo just responded in the middle. Oh, it's going to respond.
Uh-oh. Yes, Alexa, can I help you?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Digital life.
Well, I think we found a place to end it then.